This is Taking Care of Business. I'm Kat Paz, and we're going to talk about all things property. It's no secret that there is a different kind of wildfire going on this summer. The real estate market is making major shifts right now, and it's fair to ask yourself if property is still an accessible investment option. Here in the studio with me virtually is Luke Harris, author of the new book Property Fit, which is about getting your property portfolio in shape for financial freedom. Welcome to Taking Care of Business, Luke.
Thanks, Kat.
It's also a welcome again. We've had you before.
Yes. Three years ago, I think.
Yeah, wow. Gosh, I don't check how long it's been, but yeah, that sounds about right. You're totally welcome anyway. And now property is literally the hot topic in Australia, and I can imagine the rest of the world. And your book, Property Fit, just like the property, your property portfolio, has got the timing quite right and is available when there's a lot going on in property.
Yeah, look, property definitely is on the headlines quite a lot at the moment, and there's good reasons for that and bad reasons and other reasons behind it, but it is getting a lot of attention in the media right now.
Oh, absolutely. I'll start with the book. What motivated you to write the book?
Yeah, good question. When I published my first book, Let's Get Real, that was really targeted around the actual investor themselves, because I found that a lot of investors didn't really know how to plan their investment strategy and didn't really know where to start. And so Let's Get Real itself was written about how to set your goals and work on your A to B plan, where you want to go with your investing, why you're doing it in the first place, and really a mindset approach to your investing. And after the book was published, we had a lot of feedback from the book saying, yeah, love the book, really would love to get some tips on, okay, now I've got my mindset, I've got my game plan, I know how much money I need to you know, achieve all of my goals. Now, which properties do I buy? And I think what inspired me to write it was the feedback that we got from our members. And the members were saying, hey, we've got all of that stuff done now, which properties? Because I want to be a developer, or I want to do renovations, or I want to buy off the plan, or I want to go and buy in mining town because of positive cash flow. And really, it was to help people really narrow down a niche to find out which property actually fits their overall plan.
Oh, wow. That is a great journey. Talking about plans, so when buying off the plans, what should you be aware of, as you really don't have a true idea of what the final build will look like?
Absolutely. I think buying off the plan is a really unique strategy. For me in particular, it's worked extremely well. The tricky thing is there's a lot of different developers out there. So knowing which ones to buy from and which ones to avoid is really a bit of an art and a science at the same time. There's a lot of research that needs to be done on really who's behind the project rather than the building itself, because anyone can print a glossy brochure showing some really fancy images of the views you might get and how nice the kitchen's going to be. But really understanding who's behind the developer, what construction company is going to be building the project, and also understanding what works and what doesn't work on and off the planned property. And what I mean by that is the types of layouts that work for owner-occupiers and for investors, and also understanding that what the purpose of that particular property is. If it's for a university-type environment, you need to make sure that there's a university nearby, that it's got all of the amenities that university students want. There's no point in getting a property that doesn't fit the actual market that you're actually buying in.
Oh, so true. And then sometimes they say there's a pool, but it's just a lane, isn't it?
Well, that's it. And especially if you're from Perth, you need a nice big pool, don't you?
At the moment, we do. We're experiencing a lot of 30-degree something.
Quite warm.
Very, very warm. And building versus established housing has been a bit of a debate as well. The hidden costs of established housing are kind of known. Can you share some of the less common costs as well as the hidden costs of building from scratch?
Sure. Buying established property really can cause a number of issues. But the one thing that I want to highlight for a lot of people is that a lot of people sort of get the idea that they can go and walk past the home, or they can walk through it and see inside the home. But really understanding a new home, building from scratch, means that obviously you can customize that home to suit what you're trying to build to. And obviously that means building the specifications that suit you. If you're planning to rent it out long term, then you probably don't need the most expensive appliances. You don't need the most expensive taps and fixtures and fittings throughout the home. And really understanding buying an existing home is going to have extra expenses. Now, some of those are hidden, some of those are not, and some of those are well known and some of those are not. But obviously, you know, some of the existing properties that I've got and have had in the past, things like tree roots growing through pipes, they can cost you a fortune. And then 6 months later, it happens again. And so you're constantly spending money on things that don't actually benefit the property. It doesn't actually benefit the tenant. I recently put a new oven in for one of my tenants because she's obviously a very good cleaner because she's been cleaning everything so much. She cleaned all of the temperature settings off the oven. So unfortunately, there's no easy way to fix that. So we just replaced the oven for her. And that was an obvious improvement that benefited the tenant. Mind you, it might have been her fault, but it was an older oven at the time. So we thought that was a fair thing. But obviously, if you're fixing a pipe in underground, it doesn't really benefit the tenant. Doesn't bring extra rent, so it's not adding value. But it's certainly taking money from your cash flow. And the biggest issue that I've seen over the years is that people that are going through the experience of buying older properties constantly forking out money to fix them. And it might be tree roots through pipes. It might be hot water systems and light fittings and even cabling in older houses that needs to be replaced because it's not as compliant. And often the new regulations, especially in Victoria, and they're bringing them in other states as well, is that there's so many compliance things that have to be met these days that can add tens of thousands of dollars onto the costs of upgrading a property to make sure it's compliant. I think the days of having an old weatherboard home with the floors that's falling through and the taps that are leaking and calling that your rental property, I think those days are gone, or they're certainly numbered in the way that people used to think that, it's just a rental property, we can have it second best. People are expecting more these days. Tenants are staying for longer and there's more people that are renting that can't or don't want to get into the property market. So they've got a higher standard these days.
The standard is definitely higher because tenants are clearly paying, now it's obvious, they're paying like a mortgage. So they're expecting the money that they pay to meet the standard of the house they get.
And they want higher value. So this is why a lot of investors have a better outcome buying new properties, because they're obviously getting the tax benefits, but they're obviously getting a happier tenant, so they stay longer. Tenants, like you say, they're staying for longer. They want to be comfortable in their home. They're paying good rent, so they want to make sure that they've got things like air conditioning and taps that work and all of the other modern conveniences that people expect out of a property. But the thing is with buying secondhand property, if you've got all of the expenses that are jumping up and down, one month you've got a gas or water system, next minute you've got some painting that needs to be done because it hasn't been done for a long time, what happens is your cash flow goes up and down. So one month you might get all of your rent, the next month you might have next to no rent. And so what happens is people have a bad experience by buying those properties, and because their cash flow is up and down, they're forking money out of their own pocket to keep the property. Whereas a new property is more stable and more consistent, and it means that you're going to enjoy the experience a lot more. And obviously, if you enjoy the experience, you're more likely to do it again, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. I would love to think that, to be honest. I feel when we have a dripping tap, I freeze. I'm like, oh, no, this is hard work.
I've done a lot of renovations and repairs over the years, but I've never attempted plumbing. I should correct that. I have attempted plumbing. It didn't work, and I'll never do it again.
And you shouldn't do it as well, apparently.
That's right. Well, if you think replacing a tap is an easy plumbing job, it's surprisingly not.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Call the experts. I've learnt that anyway from a numbers perspective.
I was a little bit younger and a little bit more optimistic about my abilities back then on certain things, but now I absolutely outsource things to the professionals.
So with building, there's always, especially if you buy a vacant block of land that's got a tree in the middle of the yard, people think that's included in the building contract when it actually makes up like site costs.
Yeah, site costs can add quite a bit to the cost of your build. It's always good to make sure that you're doing your due diligence before buying any property, whether it be a piece of land or an existing house. And make sure you get the relevant authorities in. And, of course, ring the council and find out if there's any particular trees on that block that are protected, that can't be removed, or if you've got to trim them. And if they're in a heritage listed area, for example, there's only certain ways you can cut the tree. Councils are getting more and more involved in our lives, whether you love that or hate that. But there's often opportunities to remove trees. Another thing that you can do if you don't particularly want a tree because it's in the middle of the block and it's going to be in the way of the house that you plan on designing, put it in your contract when you're buying that the vendor has to arrange for that tree to be removed before you actually go unconditional on your contract. And that way, if it can't be done, it's the vendor's problem to deal with, not yours. Now, that's not going to work in all property markets. Perth's doing quite a lot right now. Like you said earlier, there's a bit of a wildfire going on. And so putting those types of clauses in your sale contract may not get approved. They may not even look at your offer. So you've got to be careful when to use that. But obviously doing your own research, calling an arborist, calling a council, and of course just doing those background checks before you purchase can eliminate those problems later on.
I'm hearing a lot more due diligence is needed apart from just doing a walkthrough and just signing and just saying, oh, I'm going to do a property inspection. It's all about the other stuff that you got to do that could affect your finances. So this is really good awareness for myself, and I'm sure for everyone else listening. In the book, I did notice you had a chapter called Weathering Market Shocks. Do you mind sharing a bit what that's about?
Market shocks can happen from time to time, and obviously we've all experienced that over the last 12 to 18 months with COVID, and making sure that you've got substantial buffers in place and making sure you've got enough money to get yourself through any tough times. For example, if you know interest rates went up, if you lost your job, if the housing market changed and obviously prices went down by 5 or 10 or 20%, and certainly media articles from time to time that come out saying prices are going to drop by 40%, hasn't happened yet. And that's been the last 20 years of my experience. But I guess just making sure that you've got enough buffers in place and not borrowing above what you can afford, and really getting good advice from an experienced mortgage broker is key. Making sure that the mortgage broker that you're using is somebody that's actually buying property themselves. If your mortgage broker hasn't invested in property or hasn't bought property before, you probably want to find yourself a new mortgage broker.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a very, very good point. Which takes me to the next point, which is assembling your expert team. Who's part of that? Obviously, the mortgage broker?
Yes, the mortgage broker. Obviously, there's a high-level team, and then there's a team that sort of sits underneath that. Now, the core team that you're going to need, especially for successful investing, and this is, when I say successful investing, I mean if you want to do it properly, you're going to need to have an experienced mortgage broker that specializes in investor lending. If their priority is to do first-time buyer loans or refinances for residential properties, they might be good at what they do, but they might be the best person to talk to about your investor lending. Investor loans are treated differently to owner-occupier, and therefore there's a different expertise that's required to be on top of everything that happens in that space. The second person that you're going to need in your team is a lawyer or conveyancer, somebody that understands your property investing and ultimately what you're trying to achieve, and obviously those bits of research that you've done. You can communicate those things across to your lawyer or conveyancer and make sure that certain clauses are put into the contract, subject to finance, for example, or subject to the vendor removing a tree. All of these things can be put into contracts. You don't have to accept the contract that the real estate agent gives you. All of these contracts are always up for negotiation. You can put other clauses in there, but of course, you've got to be careful that you're not being too cheeky with those clauses. Obviously, putting your offer in on the price is one thing, but there's also terms and conditions that can go into that contract as well.
And they'll help you stay reasonable.
Well, that's it. And it depends on what market you're buying into. If you've been looking in, let's say, the Perth market, for example, for some time, you'll know that prices are going up and that things are selling very quickly. So, of course, that means that you've got to be pretty accurate with your price. You've got to know the market by doing your research, talk to lots of agents. But, again, you can't be too cheeky with those clauses. If you want them to repaint the whole house and put a security alarm in for you and do the landscaping before they accept your offer, that may not get accepted in this market. But when things are a little bit quieter, maybe you could be a little bit more cheeky.
Oh, it's definitely a seller's market at the moment in Perth.
That's exactly. And it's happening all around the country. And, of course, the third person that you need in your expert team is your accountant. You're going to need somebody that can look after all of your accounting needs. And just be mindful of the fact that your accountant is there to give you tax advice. The long version of accountant is tax accountant. They're there to give you tax advice. A lot of people wrongly assume that your accountant is there to help you build wealth. They are in part, but they're not there to give advice on your investments. And, of course, the last person that you're going to need in your team, and probably I would say the most important, is your property mentor. And that's somebody that really teaches you all of the questions to ask your expert team and guides you along the way to help you with that plan. And that's why we run a business called The Property Mentors. It can really help people through that journey. If they haven't been out there before and purchased investment properties, it's quite a bit of a maze. There's a lot of information out there. And it's really knowing how to critically analyse that information and apply it to your own situation. And that's not easy to sort of to get the best result when you've never done it before and you're dealing with an investment that could be hundreds of thousands of dollars that could really make or break your financial position. So you need to be very careful on that.
Join us again next time. Bye.